Good evening and welcome to the Thursday night San Luis Obispo County Flood Control Water Conservation District Zone 3 Advisory Committee meeting for May the 19th, 2011. Welcome to those of you in the audience with us tonight. If we could have a roll call, please.
Member Wallace.
Here.
Member Bardas.
Here.
Member Gehring.
He's not going to be with us tonight.
Sorry.
Nichols. Here.
Question.
And member Costello.
Here.
And all other members are out.
Okay, we do have a quorum.
Yes.
Okay. We have a quorum with four, and I will point out that at 7:30, Chris Bardas is a much more important assignment this evening, so he'll be stepping out, but his alternate, Ed Waggy, will be stepping in, so we will maintain the quorum, so we'll be set with our four. Okay, at this point, I would like to open the floor for public comment. If there's anyone that would like to address the board on issues, you would please step forward now. Seeing no one, we'll close public comment. Item 3 on the agenda tonight is the meeting minutes of March the 17th and April the 21st. I would ask the committee if anyone has any comments, suggestions, corrections to make. If not, I'll entertain a motion.
I'll move that we accept the minutes of both Thursday, March 17, and Thursday, April 21 as published.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Seeing no discussion, can we have a voice vote on this, or do we have to have a roll call?
Voice
vote. All in favor, ayes?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? None. The motion carries. Brings us to point number 4 tonight on the agenda, operations report. I see Ron Coleman on the public works staff is listed as the representative.
I'm taking Ron's place tonight.
Well, thank you for being with us.
You're welcome. My name is Craig Kessler. I'm the chief plant operator at the Lopez facility. The current lake elevation is 519.89 feet. The acre feet is 46,936, which gives us a 95% capacity. Current plant production is 4 MGD. The state is 1.9 MGD, and the downstream release is currently 2.3 MGD. That's all I have at the moment.
Time is item A, the HCP status, questions, and schedule. Katie Drexage is up for public works staff.
Hello.
Good evening.
I would like to just kind of go over the updates as they appear in the staff report as is attached to the agenda. And the first item would be the steelhead habitat surveys above the dam. The habitat suitability index was an approach used by National Marine Fisheries Service to understand the quantity of or the quality of habitat for steelhead above Lopez Dam. And we went ahead and we had an HSI conducted by Mark Allen of TRPA. And there are some issues with the method, as it was created for the Pacific Northwest, and the Southwest experienced a more arid climate, affecting the behavior of our steelhead. However, this method still provides general understanding of habitat. So we went ahead and we conducted the surveys above Lopez Dam, and the results conclude that there is good habitat for steelhead above the dam. Of the three reaches that were studied, approximately 11 or 12 miles of stream is accessible and suitable for steelhead. There's more beyond that, but it's impeded by natural barriers. And what this means for the habitat conservation plan that we're working on is that we're going to need to address the effects of the dam on habitat upstream. The effects assessment will need to analyze whether or not the dam impacts the viability of the steelhead population. The HCP will need to look at how the dam affects historical spawning and rearing. And potential mitigation will also be addressed in the habitat conservation plan. And the next item is the flow regime model. And there's actually no change in the status to this. Therefore, we have no update for this issue at this time. And the habitat conservation boundary issue. The HCP boundary is the area for which the county is requesting incidental take coverage. Since steelhead cannot migrate upstream of the dam, modifying the HCP boundary may not be required, even if mitigation for loss of upstream habitat is ultimately needed. If it is determined that impacts will only affect covered species downstream of the dam, then the HCP boundary can be limited to the downstream area, which is what we've been kind of assuming all along.
Joe, can I ask a question?
Yes.
Yeah, Katie, what is exactly this incidental take coverage?
That's the permit we're basically applying for. The HCP is part of the application process. If a dead steelhead or a red-legged frog show up, but we're implementing our HCP as we've agreed upon, then we're covered for that take.
Good. Thank you.
Yes, Chris.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good evening. Thank you for the presentation so far. In regards to the first item, the habitat suitability index, and that there's indication that the HCP needs to address the effects of the dam on habitat upstream, how is that going to be done? I mean, if the dam's there and there was habitat there historically, but the dam presents a barrier, how can mitigation be developed to mitigate for those impacts upstream? Is it just going to require even more or greater habitat restoration downstream of the dam to try to make up for both loss of habitat downstream of the dam and upstream?
Possibly. We're still looking into what kind of mitigation measures we can anticipate, and I think that's one of the questions later that we have for Anthony with National Marine Fisheries Service.
Okay.
Maybe to give us a little more insight, because, yeah, it could mean, you know, greater types of restoration projects, you know, within the same watershed, or, what other options are there. We're still trying to figure that out.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Katie, just a quick question. The flow regime model, what's the holdup on that, or is there any holdup on it?
No holdup.
Okay. It's been completed?
Right. I think it was the January or February letter from National Marine Fisheries Service said that generally it looked good.
Okay.
And to go ahead and proceed with incorporating it into the habitat conservation plan that we have right now.
How general is that, or is that specifically that? And I guess we can get into this with Anthony.
I believe that's the first question we have for him.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I've got no questions, so if you want to continue.
Okay. The next item that I have an update for would be the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service review and coordination. We've been really focusing on National Marine Fisheries Service up until now, basically to get the flow regime model agreed upon. And now that we have that, county staff is intending to develop a presentation for a joint meeting with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the National Marine Fisheries Service that will discuss the project history, update the Fish and Wildlife Service on the project status, and assist both agencies with their NEPA document determination. It's been a number of years since we've talked with Fish and Wildlife Service, so they're going to need some, basic project history and the status update. It's kind of bring them up to speed. I'm not sure if they'll have new staff working on it now. Last time, Rio Grande Creek Lagoon. So that would be a species we need to discuss and analyze impacts to, if there are any.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
I think you're good to go again.
Okay. Regarding NEPA review, NMFS is evaluating the level of National Environmental Policy Act documentation that will be required. We're looking at possibly an environmental assessment or an environmental impact statement for this project. NMFS has contacted Fish and Wildlife Service to begin these discussions. Fish and Wildlife Service is unable to provide much guidance at this point since they have not seen the HCP for a number of years. Fish and Wildlife Service should be brought up to speed regarding the HCP, and then they will be able to coordinate with NMFS, and both agencies can make a joint determination regarding what NEPA document is required for our project.
Do we have any idea of when we can expect determination on what we're going to need to do?
I would imagine that depends on how fast county staff can get together a presentation and a joint meeting with the two agencies. Because we're going to use that method to bring U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service up to speed.
Probably not by the next meeting, then. It's 2 months, so figure 4.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Okay. We'll wait and see.
And while NMFS is still determining what NEPA document is required, they've suggested that county staff set up a conference call with NMFS and Fish and Wildlife to discuss NEPA. But like I said, county staff is intending to develop a presentation for a joint meeting in person versus conference call.
Mr. Chairman, I just had a quick question. Katie, the process has been going on for roughly 10 years, and the service has seen many parts of the HCP. Do they have a preliminary conclusion as to what they're thinking on the NEPA determination from their previous reviews? And I'm frankly a little surprised that they haven't seen the draft document, as you say here, for a number of years.
Mm-hmm. Well, I believe during that time we were still working out the flow regime model, so that's why we just kind of kept it in-house. And I'm not entirely sure if they have any kind of preliminary ideas or not, because I haven't been talking with them. Anthony might know a little more because he's been coordinating with Fish and Wildlife more regularly.
Well, obviously, it would be beneficial to the Zone 3 folks to have...
I believe the alternative section is partially complete.
Okay. But is it quantitative? I mean, is there that much detail between the alternatives in case we're moving forward to an EIS?
I don't think at this point that there is that kind of information, that
okay.
detail.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Okay. The next topic was conducting a peer review of the HCP and provide technical work. Recommendations on the next steps, including H.T. Harvey's peer review, will be presented at the Zone 3 TAC and Advisory Committee once comments from National Marine Fisheries Service and Fish and Wildlife Service provide some general indication of revisions they believe are appropriate. And then next steps is recommended that the county continue with efforts to revise the HCP to include the approved flow regime model while NMFS and Fish and Wildlife determine what NEPA document is appropriate. And are there any questions?
Just again, when do you anticipate having the peer review document to attack? Is it the next meeting?
I don't know. I don't know if I have that information.
Okay.
But.
Maybe we could talk to you about it later on after you get more information from the folks here, so we can maybe ask that later on here.
Okay. And that's what I have for my update. And so, Anthony, do you want to address some questions? Is that?
Please, why don't you come up and join us, Anthony?
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, committee members. I'm Anthony Spina. I work for the National Marine Fisheries Service, Southwest Regional Office in Long Beach. And I was asked and agreed to come this evening to this public meeting to respond to your questions regarding the habitat conservation plan for Lopez Dam. Before I do that, I just want to have one opening remark, and that is we have worked quite a bit with the county on development of a water release schedule, if you will, from Lopez Dam. And overall, National Marine Fisheries Service believes that we're in a good position. That is to say that we've recommended to the county that they proceed and build a conservation program around that water release schedule. So in general, questions rather than me just.
Well, we have a list of did you get the written list ahead of time?
I did.
Okay. Why don't we just get started with that and just start with question one. The February the 3rd letter seemed to indicate that you approved our proposed flow regime model. Is that true that you do?
Well, I would say that's not accurate. With regard to a habitat conservation plan, there's really two phases to that habitat conservation plan. There's a pre-application phase, and there's a formal processing phase. And the phase that we're in now is referred to the pre-application phase. And in that phase, NMFS serves essentially as an advisor. So we don't have what I would call a role here. It's purely, we purely function as an advisor. So in that regard, we've advised the county that we believe the water release schedule is suitable to use as a basis to develop a conservation program as part of that habitat conservation plan.
So may I ask a question?
Please, go right ahead.
So, Mr. Spina, does that mean that you guys are approving the suitability of the flow regime model to proceed in fleshing out the HCP, or is there likely to be other questions about the model as the county goes forward in the process?
Yeah, so Mr. Wallace, I would say the latter is more accurate. As we move through time and develop a deeper, more full understanding of the Habitat Conservation Plan, particularly the full range of the covered activities that the county is seeking coverage for, as well as an understanding of the effects and so on and so forth, we're likely to have further questions regarding the water release schedule. But at this time, what we're saying is that we believe it's appropriate for the county to move forward and use the water release schedule that's been currently defined as a basis to develop the conservation program that will ultimately form the Habitat Conservation Plan. So again, I just want to emphasize at this point, we're not approving anything. It's not our role to approve. Our role at this time is one to advise. And so it's a good thing, just to be clear, that we are advising the county to move forward with the water release schedule that's currently defined.
Have you reviewed it in detail, or have your technical staff reviewed it in detail?
When you say it, are you referring to the water release schedule?
Correct.
Yeah. So I have personally reviewed the water release schedule as well as an additional technical individual within NIMS.
At the point where we are now, with such an important factor in the process being the flow regime model and the water release schedule, it would seem that you folks would have more of a positive feeling about that you could communicate to us that it's going to be a pretty good, pretty close model with what we're needing to do here.
So one of the things I've learned over the years, not just working with the county, but other entities as well, is there's still quite a bit of work that needs to be done before we get to a point where we have a final determination. And I would say that we still do have quite a ways to go here. There's still a lot for NIMS to understand regarding the HCP, in particular the covered activities, the effects, what kind of mitigation program they're all interrelated. For example, the water release schedule is intended to create and maintain habitat for steelhead. There's likely to be effects of the project that cannot be fully accounted for by that water release schedule. And so one of the things we want to understand as we move through time is what are the residual effects, the type and the amount, and what sort of consequence do they have for the resource. Once we have that understanding, we might want to revisit the flow schedule to see if there's anything more that we can do or that the county is willing to do to account for those residual effects. So I'm not trying to be evasive. I'm just trying to be realistic here and only commit to what I believe we can commit at this time. Overall, I'm happy to say that we have advised the county that they should move forward with that water release schedule. We are happy about it. It's a good start, and we expect it'll produce some good things for the resource. But that's as far as we're willing to commit at this time until we have a more complete package in front of us.
Anthony, you say that the county should move forward with a water release schedule. What exactly does that mean? Move forward with the application process? Move forward with doing the water release? What do you mean?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So what I mean by that is we recommended and the county agreed long ago to work with us on developing a ecologically meaningful water release schedule from the dam, because we felt that water release schedule was going to provide the foundation for the Habitat Conservation Plan. We've done that.
You know, kind of if you were to look at it, the analogy of an EIR, you have a project description which describes your project, both short-term and long-term, and you prepare your EIR pursuant to that project description. And during the review process, you may find ways or need to refine or tweak that project description through that process. Are we kind of in a similar situation where this flow regime is part of this? It's kind of like the project description is at a state where we're getting ready to put it into the full complex or form of a habitat conservation plan, and that through the habitat conservation plan process, there may be minor little refinements that need to be done, but that's about it. Otherwise, you get stuck in this infinite loop.
Yeah. Well, the intention is certainly not to get stuck in this infinite loop. The intention is to implement a properly functioning HCP. So I believe where we're at is we envision that the county will take that water release schedule and put that firmly in the conservation program and then develop other parts of the habitat conservation program, required elements of that program, such as the effects, mitigation program, adaptive management, monitoring. So I suppose just reflecting on your analogy, I would say that might be a fair analogy at this time. But again, as the document, the draft document, moves through the review process with NIMS, and I suspect Fish and Wildlife Service, there is likely going to need to be some modifications. To what exactly, I don't know. I don't know the nature, but I suspect from experience there's going to need to be some modifications just to ensure consistency with the issuance criteria for the incidental take permit. So,
thank you, Mr. Spino. One other question. Maybe Ms. Check says you could comment on this. Is there any thought of and maybe it's already been done, kind of a work plan to take us through this process and maybe some type of partnering agreement between the county, NIMS, and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to guide us through this effort toward having a document that's ready to go through review? And I recognize that I'm jumping early or late into the game, being that I just got on this board a couple months ago.
Oh, no problem. It's somewhat confusing, too, because all these updates I have kind of maybe don't seem to make sense, but the peer review we had conducted by H.T. Harvey & Associates took our draft HCP as it is now, and they identified, you know, what basically was okay in the document and what still we needed to complete to meet you to get that document in a format where then we can send it to National Marine Fisheries Service and Fish and Wildlife Service for review. And then ultimately they can look at it, analyze it, and hopefully we can get our permit out of the process.
Just one final question. I know we need to move on to the other the questions here, but have you been able to review the schedule that the county put together for the process?
I have not reviewed the most recent schedule.
It's roughly showing that once we have a draft HCP, that is about a 17-month period of time to finish it off and to achieve a permit. Is that reasonable from what you've seen so far?
It's a good question. It's really difficult to say what represents a reasonable schedule for an HCP because all HCPs are different. As part of this pre-application phase and NIMS serving as advisors, you know, the reason why we advise is to increase the likelihood that once we get to the final processing phase, that phase will proceed in a seamless fashion according to schedule. So at this point, as I've said in other meetings that I've attended before, this committee is we'll move as quickly as we can in light of existing workload and staff limitations. This is a applicant-driven process, so we will attempt to move as quickly as we can whenever the county needs us to engage. So,
well, maybe this is a question for the county as well as for NIMS. The schedule starts once we have an accepted, I'm not sure if that's the right word, but we have a draft HCP that we can submit for the formal application process. Maybe you or Anthony, Katie, could comment about when do you think we'll have an acceptable draft to begin the 17-month process that you've laid out here?
I think that's going to depend on what holes we still maybe have in the draft HCP and then staff time to get to the HCP to fill in those holes.
Do you have any estimate of time?
I do not, just because I'm not in charge of assigning workloads right now.
I see Mr. Ogren preaching.
Committee members, Pablo Ogren, Public Works Director. This is actually a little bit of an answer that Katie was jumping around on, the timing of the H.T. Harvey review. Because if we were to expand down to the ocean, then we've got another species that we haven't really even analyzed yet. It's the tidewater goby. So for us to be able to give a better estimate on the timing of getting that draft together, it's really getting back together with Fish and Wildlife, getting them up to speed on issues that are more germane to their jurisdiction, and then comparing where they think we should be going with what H.T. Harvey is saying also. I kind of didn't want to jump out and do a big H.T. Harvey review right now because I want to get that Fish and Wildlife meeting underway and start getting them back involved in the process, because I think it's NIMS, it's Fish and Wildlife, and it's what H.T. Harvey is advising us. That is the totality of the input that we need to put together in order to figure out how we need to revise the draft HCP. But there's no doubt we think that, you know, there's going to be work that's necessary on the existing draft before it's going to be ready. So I think, again, after we've had the Fish and Wildlife meeting and been able to work with the TAC on the H.T. Harvey review, we'll be in a better position to give some timing estimates.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pablo. Anthony, if you come back and join us again, maybe we can move along and get through these a little bit faster.
That's number one.
Let me just ask the follow-up to question one there was, is this true? You said no, it's not true. Then if not, what additional questions or recommendations do you have in order for us to finalize a flow regime model?
At this time, NIMS does not have any questions or information needs.
Any questions over here? Okay, then moving into question two. Once we get a revised draft of the HCP to you, are we still on track for a one-year review period?
So is that one-year review period within the pre-application phase? Is that what that means? Or does that mean a one-year review period to only get your ITP, your incidental take permit?
I think I have some background information on that. I believe it's for the pre-application phase.
Okay.
You're basically the 1 year to look at the entire document and provide all comments that you might have. Unless it's, of course, perfect at that point, then move on to the next phase.
Okay, so just to be clear, so then this specific question is referring to during the pre-application phase, can NIMS turn around a review within a year?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't see why that's not possible for us during the pre-application phase. But again, I want to emphasize that NIMS's role during this time is to assist the county, determine whether or not they've met the issuance criteria, as well as criteria pertaining to...
A little confused on your schedule. So the schedule that you've given us is the one-year time period that you're talking about in the pre-app phase not shown on the schedule?
Correct.
So once we get to the end of that one-year period for the pre-app, then we have another 17 months scheduled to get the permit issued?
I believe that's assuming that's when we have a finalized draft HCP is at the start of that time.
Okay.
Time frame.
So 2.5 years roughly from where we are today. Am I interpreting it correctly?
I think so.
Because what you show here is about a 17-month or...
Right. I mean, if we have a draft tomorrow to National Marine Fisheries for review and they can turn it back to us within a year, if they have a... It depends on the amount of comments that they give back to us. There might be substantial issues that we need to address, so it would be back in our court regarding the time frame.
Once that draft is complete, then this schedule starts?
Correct.
Okay. I didn't understand that. I thought the whole thing was a year and a half, but we have another year tacked onto this here that you've given us. Okay.
Okay. Moving on, any other questions? Okay, moving on to question three. Considering that steelhead cannot get beyond the dam, how does the Habitat Suitability Index, the HSI, that was completed for areas upstream of Lopez Reservoir influence your evaluation of the HCP?
So the information that was developed about the habitat quality and availability upstream of the dam helps us understand the degree to which the HCP needs to consider effects of the dam on blocking steelhead to those habitats. So for instance, as the findings from that study indicate, there's a considerable amount of good quality habitat upstream of the dam. So in our view, that would require that the HCP consider the effect of the dam on blocking steelhead to passage of those habitats.
Question, and I think maybe it kind of relates to number six, but as far as mitigation requirements for impacts for habitat above the dam, I mean, you can't really do, you would have to be compensatory mitigation, or how would you deal with that? or how does that have to be dealt with?
Well, the issuance criteria
maybe Katie, Ms. Trexedge can help me. I don't know. How would you mitigate that, though, for upstream?
So some of the, if I may.
Please.
So some of the mitigation measures that have been considered involve providing the critter access to those habitats by making physical modifications of the structure so that the resource can access those areas once again. That's an option that's been considered.
Fish ladder, or is that?
A fish ladder.
Oh, okay.
There's some collection methods that are under consideration. So there's a variety of options that are available to attempt to mitigate the effects of the dam on the resource.
So we have to wait and just go through the study and see what we come up with before we find out what kind of mitigation efforts may or may not be needed.
So just to be clear, as part of the county's effort to develop the HCP, they will need to consider the effects of the operation of the facility on Steelhead. So within that cloud of effects, of course, involve the effects of the dam on this critter for its ability to access the habitat. So those effects will come out. They'll be disclosed. And once those effects are disclosed and documented and known, then the county can begin to develop a suitable mitigation package for those effects, and we can review and advise the county on the appropriateness of that mitigation element.
Following up with a question, Mr. Chairman.
Certainly.
This is Jim Gehring's special questions, I guess, relating to the original permitting of the dam that's been in effect for, 43 years or so. And as we understood it from some of the documents that Jim had provided, that the effect of the review at the time was that it was taken into consideration. And so here we are 40 some odd years later, and wondering why we have to look at that again, since that was taken into effect during the actual construction of the dam, when there's really no feasible way that fish can get above the dam with such a large obstacle there. And there's no way, of course, the dam could be taken down, which is not an alternative. To the county, some of the documents that related to the description of the review at the time that the dam was built and the permitting that went on relating to the effect of the wildlife above the dam. Do you recall that?
I recall us discussing the biological opinion prepared for the seismic retrofit.
Maybe it was for the seismic retrofit. I apologize.
Oh, no problem. And that was in, I think, 2001. I think that's the only document I can think of that Jim Gehring brought up in meetings.
So, yeah, I'm familiar with that biological opinion. And my recollection of the specific part of that opinion that deals with the dam and its effects is that the opinion did speak to the issue that the dam does block Steelhead from habitat, and it has effects. But my recollection's opinion also does say that NIMS will specifically work with the county on addressing that issue through the habitat conservation planning process. So functionally what we were doing is we were saying, well, we're not going to deal with it at this time. We're going to deal with it in the context of the HCP.
Well, again, we're all at a disadvantage because we don't have the document here before us tonight, but I thought it was more affirmative than that. But perhaps you're correct, Anthony, about the deferment of that discussion to the HCP.
Okay. Follow-up on three was A, with regards to the boundary and I guess that addresses the issue of the boundary of the Habitat Suitability Index, whether it's going to be inclusive of the upstream area or not. And with regards to mitigation proposals, and I think you've told us the mitigation proposals will just have to be developed as we determine what kind of effects and impacts there might be. So I'm not sure you can answer anything more about that particular answer. Okay, we'll move on to question number four. Are there any other issues that you can identify currently identify that would likely influence the HCP's boundary?
So at this particular moment in time, you know, it's really difficult to say because it's not clear to NIMS whether the county is what specific covered activities the county is thinking of that they want inclusion in the HCP. And our general understanding is that they want operations of Lopez Dam covered. If that's the case, then the county can propose what they would. It would capture that takings. That's really what we're talking about here, just to be clear so we have some common reference. So again, at this point, I don't feel comfortable speaking to what specifically the boundary should be, because although I do recall the county is seeking coverage for operation of Lopez Dam, I'm not entirely clear if that's all we're going to be looking at, or if it may include other related activities. And so those activities really dictate the boundary, if you will.
Thank you, Anthony. Any other questions on that issue?
Just the same question again. What's your opinion of the suitability index findings with respect to the area upstream of the dam, and whether or not you would be recommending that the boundary be extended above the dam?
Okay, so my opinion about the findings are that my opinion is based on the report I read, and the findings from that report make it pretty clear that there is quite a bit of suitable habitat for the species. We've identified several miles of habitat just in the streams that were surveyed. There were a number of streams that apparently weren't surveyed. As far as how that relates to the boundary of the HCP, again, the boundary of the HCP pertains to the area in which the county wishes take coverage for. So if the county is not going to be engaging, currently we don't have steelhead above the dam. And so our advice to the county is that if steelhead are not going to be getting upstream of the dam, there's no need to seek coverage for takings up there, and therefore the boundary would not extend upstream. The boundary would only be confined downstream of the dam. On the other hand, over time, if the mitigation measures include extending the steelhead's range back up to historical habitat, then it may be appropriate, emphasize may be appropriate, to extend the boundary upstream. But at this time, that's not clear.
Okay. And number five, how would removal of natural barriers above Lopez Dam help to mitigate the impacts of the dam?
That's a good question. But typically, NIMS hasn't, to my knowledge, we have not been engaged or advised the removal of.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like if, you know, kind of one of the burning questions we've been driving at is whether there's going to be a requirement to try to allow for restore some type of passage above the dam, and if there's not, which seems at this point just, in my opinion, highly infeasible, then trying to remove natural barriers to mitigate impact seems kind of new.
Well, I suppose I hear a couple things being discussed this evening. One is, the removal of natural barriers versus restoring steelhead access to historical spawning earring habitat, and I see those as being somewhat different things. There's situations where NIMS is involved in where we're looking at restoring steelhead access upstream of an introduced migration barrier, but we're not considering, okay, once the resource gets up there, do we want to look at removing natural barriers farther upstream to increase the species range? We're not doing that, again, because they're natural barriers, but we are considering getting the steelhead past introduced migration barriers. The other item that I've heard tonight is the feasibility. And I think it's a little bit too soon to prejudge feasibility. One thing that we're engaged in throughout the state is looking at the feasibility of fish passage, and it requires quite a process relying on technical experts in the fields of hydrology, biology, fish engineering, and so on and so forth, to really
apply the set of tools that they have available to them to reach a reliable determination. So again, I believe it's a bit premature to prejudge whether or not Fish Passage is feasible there at this time. But again, I want to emphasize that this is the county's HCP. It's an applicant-driven process, and it's up to them to develop the conservation program. We'll advise them on the appropriateness of whatever it is they put in front of us.
Thank you, Mr. Spina.
Which leads to question six. Have you had a chance to look at the overall mitigation measures? If so, can you give some feedback?
So years ago, when I received the first draft HCP, I did review the entire document, including the mitigation measures. But at that time, at the time of my review of that initial draft, that draft was specifying a water release schedule that, in my opinion, is considerably different than the water release schedule that the county is currently arrived at, and that's a good thing. So because of that, I would expect the level of mitigation now, because to my knowledge, there's not been a complete assessment of the effects, particularly in light of the new water release schedule. So we have a water release schedule that's, in my view, better than the one we had before. So I believe the county should take a fresh look at the effects that are going to result once that water release schedule that we have before us now is implemented.
Thank you.
I had a question on that. Anthony, you're saying that there's not been a complete analysis of the effects of the release schedule that the county's proposed?
So what I'm saying is we now have a water release schedule that differs from the one that we saw in the early draft.
Right.
And so because of that, and because it's better than the one we had before, it's likely going to resolve some of the effects related to water storage and diversion. Okay. And so because of that, I would expect that would trigger a new look at the effects that result from the overall project.
But from my recollection, it looked like that the release schedule, again, we're all hampered by not having the document or the data in front of us. Maybe Katie knows better than anybody. Looking at that data before, it looked as if the release schedule that was being proposed now mimicked the natural flows of the creek better than ever before. In fact, it enhanced the flow of the creek even more so than some of the natural flow from years when the dam was not there and the creek dried up. And I thought that the result of that was the effects of the current schedule bettered the overall situation historically, and therefore the effects would be more beneficial than historical information. I don't know, Katie, is that what your recollection of the data is?
I'm not sure in comparison to historical, but I do know that the current flow regime model is much more better for steelhead habitat now than it was originally.
So in the process to completely analyze the effects to get to a point where we can get out of the pre-app phase, what do you think is required at this point to continue to analyze those effects of the flow regime model?
Well, just to be clear, what I'm talking about is there's a process for sure, you know, that those high magnitude flows have an ecological benefit for the resource. So when we look at that water release schedule, we see that the magnitude of flows are going to be considerably lower than historically existed. So we're interpreting that to represent an effect to the species. So there's still going to be an effect. And so what I'm saying is we would advise the county to look at the effects to inform the mitigation program. And it's not just, there's really, we would expect three principal effects owing to the operation of Lopez Dam, okay? Effects to the pattern and magnitude of flow downstream of the dam, geomorphic effects, as well as effects due to habitat blockage. Those are the three principal effects that should form the basis of the effects analysis related to steelhead.
And have we done that in the current analysis of the draft HCP to this date?
Not to date.
Okay. Okay, item number 7. This is the last one on my list. Now that you've gained some level of comfort with the flow regime model and obtained the HSI, do you have an opinion on what level of NEPA documentation would be appropriate for this project? And if you've not had a chance to form this determination, what considerations are needed to come up with that determination?
So, as I mentioned earlier, NIMS has begun the process of determining the level of NEPA review. That process has not been completed, and so I'm unable at this time to say what that determination might be. With regard to what needs to be done, yeah, it's clear what NIMS needs to be done. We have a standard NEPA process that we follow to guide the manner in which we arrive at that determination. And that process involves reaching out and collaborating with Fish and Wildlife Service, and we've attempted to do that. And I recently had discussions with them this morning about this topic, and they've indicated to me an interest in collaborating with us on that process. So overall, the process is clearly defined for us. We just need to continue plugging through it.
Okay, thank you. And item B under that is, who ultimately makes the determination with regards to which NEPA document will be appropriate for proposed project, NIMFS or Fish and Wildlife? So we'll just follow the process along and see what happens. Any other questions from the committee?
I have one last question, and I'm not sure if it's directed to Mr. Spina or to you. Do you feel that there's a good indication or work plan of what needs to be done, needs to be completed in order to get to this point where we're at the first row in the schedule that H.T. Harvey and Associates put together?
I do. I believe that the review is very complete. That's my personal opinion.
Of H.T. Harvey's review?
Yes. I believe that their review of our draft HCP identified what holes we need to patch.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Spina, again for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Chris. Do you need to exit?
I do, but I could wait till Mr. Wallace has a question to ask.
I can't resist. I'm sorry, Anthony.
No problem, Mr. Wallace.
You know, part of it, and I really appreciate you folks appearing and subjecting yourself to our questions and some of our impatience with the process. But part of the problem, I think, is just the lack of a work plan, a solid work plan, our roadmap that we're going down, and Katie has done a lot of work in preparing a schedule that goes past the pre-app phase. Could you work with the county in developing another piece of the schedule, the process that could be outlined to go in front of the schedule here so we can know better what sequence and what steps are involved and what decision points, milestones there are to be achieved? That would seem to go a long way so that we don't have to repeat questions and we have a better understanding of the process and makes for better communication.
So, again, as part of our role, is we're happy to work and advise the county consistent with our responsibilities at this time. So if that means that the county wishes to dialogue with us to define what they believe is a reasonable schedule, I believe we'll be into that. That's something that we do quite often. The one thing I would caution against, though, is making a schedule that's too ambitious, that's not tempered by reality.
Well, one suggestion would be maybe that the county could put together that draft, that roadmap, to get it to that point, and it could be submitted to the service and to your organization for review. And there's some milestone dates, but, you know, we don't want to – schedule is a schedule. And
to have at least the sequence of events that are necessary to be achieved to get to the application phase. And again, to identify those, even though we understand schedules and we know that there's things that are occurrences that will delay that schedule or modify it and maybe hopefully accelerate it, but at least to have a clear picture of the sequence of events that are necessary, that would be very helpful, I think.
I would agree, Mr. Wallace. It's probably more appropriate to rely on a sequence of events rather than to get deep in a schedule. So I would definitely support that.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate you being here.
Yeah, so thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. And I, to the extent that my workload and our budget situation allows me to come up here, I enjoy coming up here, and I will continue to do so. I don't mind. I believe it's important for the county to have NIMS present. I believe it's important for NIMS to show its support for what the county is doing. So I don't mind. You all have treated me civil over the years, and some of us go way back. So I particularly enjoy coming up here. So thank you for inviting me. And I look forward to being in front of you again in the future. So thank you.
Thank you, Anthony. I think there may be questions from the public. Is that?
Mr. Chairman, I do. If you don't mind,
yes.
I do need to
go right ahead.
Step out, and Councilmember Waggy or Board Member Waggy, the alternate, is going to take my place. And again, I appreciate the time tonight. And again, thank you, Mr. Spina, for your availability.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Mara Lee Hyman, Pismo Beach. I'm a member of the public that is also impatient with the process and the cost to our community in trying to get the HCP in place. I do appreciate your efforts, the county's efforts, Mr. Spina's efforts to move it along. It just is ungodly slow. I have five questions. First, I'm interested in how many applications Mr. Spina has before him now for an HCP. Just a general question, you know, does everybody else experience this same slow process? And how many of these HCPs have you granted in the 10 years that we've been trying to get an HCP for question two? Number three, are there any other protected species above ZP plan that need to be addressed? And the last question, when the dam was retrofitted, did we essentially change the nature of the dam? So much so that federal regulations became retroactive and in the retrofit and require extra mitigation after the fact. Thank you.
Thank you. Anthony, do you mind answering those questions?
I'll try, based on my understanding. So with regard to the first question, which was the number of HCP applications that are before me, well, again, we have, if my recollection is correct, I believe we have, I believe it's less than five, and they're just draft documents, and actually, they're not even documents at this time. They're just entities who've come in the door seeking an incidental take permit from NIMS, and we've worked with them to start them off on the process. So I just want to be clear, we don't have any actual documents before us in addition to what we've gotten from the county. And again, I believe we're dealing less than five, is my recollection, as I've look over to one of my colleagues for confirmation, but I believe that's accurate. The number that we've granted, we haven't granted any incidental take permits for any of those because, for a variety of reasons, but probably primarily because the applicants have not progressed to the point where they've sent to us a suitable draft HCP. One of the things I've learned over the years is who the consultant is that's hired to assist the applicant is key in terms of success. Success defined as how quickly the applicant moves through the process as well as whether or not they get the permit. We have seen some consultants hired by applicants who, although they might say their experience fundamentally, over time they demonstrate that for whatever reason, they're just not sufficiently competent to prepare the application. So I want to emphasize this, who the applicant hires is really key. Two, habitat conservation plans, it can be fairly complex to develop something. So the third question, NIMS has no other jurisdictional species upstream of Lopez Dam. With the fourth question, it wasn't entirely clear to me, but it sounded like what was the question is, what activities does NIMS believe the county should seek coverage for? Or
actually, it's a question to the county.
Okay.
Katie, you want to try and answer that?
The activities we're looking for coverage are simply the releases from Lopez Dam and the operations of the dam.
And then the fifth question, it wasn't entirely clear to me. You could maybe elaborate a little.
It seems like it's retroactive.
What's retroactive?
The HCP for the element above the dam. Shouldn't we be looking at below the dam?
So, so I'm still not clear, but the real issue is that. So your question is, why are we looking upstream of the dam? We should be looking below the dam.
Environmental impact, right?
Yeah. So that I suppose that's partially true. You know, with a dam, there's effects that can extend downstream as well as effects that can extend upstream. For example, in the case of a dam that's blocking a salmon from reaching historical spawning and rearing habitat, we often look upstream to get an understanding of what that habitat is to help us understand its consequence or its meaning. For example, if a dam is blocking a salmon from maybe 100 yards of habitat that's very poor quality naturally, well, there probably isn't much of any effect there. But on the other hand, if a dam is blocking a salmon from dozens of miles of suitable spawning and rearing habitat, well, we know from the ecological literature that that can be problematic for the long-term survival of that resource. So we would argue there that there is an effect there. We need to think about what that means for development of a habitat conservation plan. So overall, where we look in part relates to what the effects are. If a dam is only blocking salmon from 100 yards of stream, well, we probably don't need to look upstream. We can look downstream for suitable mitigation. Does that help?
No, I'm not really comfortable with that answer because you're talking something that happened.
Bottom line is we have this Endangered Species Act that was written in 1973, and it requires us to take certain actions depending upon whether there's a federal connection or a non-federal connection. So we can't bypass that. We recognize that these structures have been in existence many years, but we still have this law that requires that they be brought into compliance with the Endangered Species Act, regardless of how long they've been operating.
That's in the act, to be retroactive?
Well, it isn't. I don't know what you mean by retroactive in the case of the Endangered Species Act and Lopez, but
if you demand mitigation for it,
okay, so, well, we're not going to demand anything, I can assure you that. What we're going to do is advise the county and make recommendations. But the requirements of this particular permitting process make clear that there are certain requirements that must be fulfilled in order for the county to get their incidental take permit. So I suppose if you choose, you can call that retroactive, but fundamentally what we're doing here is we're assisting the county meet the requirements of the Endangered Species Act. If they do that, in turn, they will receive a permit that demonstrates their compliance with the Endangered Species Act.
And follow up, I think perhaps a question that was early on, how many permits have been issued?
At the Southern California Office for Steelhead, we have not issued an incidental take permit. But in our other offices or throughout the state, I'm being signaled that we've issued 5. Well, again, you have to realize that a lot of our species, a lot of the salmon and steelhead, they've only been listed about 10 years. It's not, in contrast to Fish and Wildlife Service, they've had species listed for long, long, long time. So. You know, maybe in 10 years from now, we'll be able to say, hey, we've issued a lot more, but you got to take that into account, that we've only had listed species for a relatively short time. Steelhead in this area were listed in 1997. 20 years, but still some people, we've been wanting to talk to them for years, and we haven't started those discussions until recently. So, you know, it just takes time.
Just to follow up on that, Anthony, you're saying that you guys have issued no incidental take permits from the Southern California region?
Correct. Incidental take permits under Section 10 for steelhead.
And Northern District has issued 5?
Well, throughout the remainder of the state, I'm told that we've issued 5. It's a more expeditious route to achieve ESA compliance. So they often choose and go through that process. So if you ask me how many consultations have we done with people, well, we've done thousands, at least, you know, on water projects and other types of anthropogenic activity. So to some degree, the numbers that we have issued reflects the number of activities that we're engaged in and those particular types of activities in Section 10. So
there's no way that you can see a federal nexus to our project?
I don't, but I'm not as close to the project as county staff. You know, for there to be a federal nexus, there would have to be some federal agency who is authorizing, funding, or carrying out an action related to Lopez Dam. So, for example, there's a Bureau of Reclamation loan or a contract you know, if there's a small hydro facility located in the depths of Lopez Dam that we don't know about, there'd be a connection with Federal Energy Regulatory Commission.
I think we just figured out how to get a federal nexus.
So.
Well, again, Anthony, thank you for your time and your commitment to the project, to the process, not the project, the process, and I look forward to seeing you again with this at some future time, depending on budgets and availability.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, committee members.
Okay. Moving along to item. I guess. Is there any other public comment involving this matter?
Sorry.
Don't leave just let Anthony.
Pardon?
Don't leave just let Anthony.
I know. Hi, Mary Lou Siaciano. I just had a question. Is how long has the relationship been with NIMS in San Luis Obispo County? Has it been 10 years?
It's been 10 years, I think.
Yeah, and was it anticipated that, I kind of feel like this is an entity that's been built into the institution, and I'm wondering is if all the partners in the Lopez project anticipated having to fund this.
NIMS is advising us. They're acting in advisory capacity to the county in terms of the county submitting for a permit for the take. And I think no one had any concept of the length or dollars involved in this process when we got started.
Hi, Steph Wald, Central Coast Salmon Enhancement. We have an interest in watching the HCP unfold. I just wanted to provide a small piece of ancient history probably at this time, prior to my involvement. But to my understanding, the need for the HCP arose out of settlement from a lawsuit brought by an organization called CalSpa. And that was a long time ago. I think it was 1994. And in an attempt to basically allow the county to reduce liability, the HCP idea evolved over time and perhaps out of the settlement. Perhaps Paavo can describe more of the background history, if he's still here. But that, I think it's an important item to keep in mind in terms of why the cost and the time and the effort and the listing in terms of the history within the watershed. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephanie. Paavo, I see you coming forward.
Well, there was a period of time that I wasn't with the county. I'm actually not aware of any settlement agreement. What my recollection is that it was part of a state water board directive to us. In order to seek corrections of our water rights permit. And that certainly would make sense because part of, you know, the evolution of the environmental regs and how the Endangered Species Act can affect operations, and this kind of gets to the question of retroactive mitigation requirements also, is that it's our general belief that, like the Mona Lake decision is what is also driving this one, where it was through the water rights process itself that the courts told the State Water Board that they had to address the issue of endangered species. And so that set the precedent when it comes to the relationship of water rights and current uses as opposed to original construction of the dam and the requirement to, you know, be in the process that we have right now. So, again, we...
Moving along, we'll go to item 5B, the Declaration of Surplus Water. John Diodati.
Thank you, Chairman Costello. This is the only action item I have for your committee tonight. This is the request for endorsement of proposed declaration of surplus water, and the staff recommendation is that your advisory committee approve the Public Works Director's declaration of 2,465 acre-feet of surplus water for water year 10-11. This item was brought to the TAC on May 5th, and they recommended that you endorse the declaration and sale of surplus water. And if endorsed, the Public Works Director will make the formal declaration, and then your agencies can provide the district with the amounts of water that they would desire to obtain, and then deliveries can be made. We are going to be offering the water in a pro rata share, and allocations will be made and reoffers will be made until no water is left. So
questions?
With that, any questions?
John, I just had one question. If after the offer and reoffer, if there is still a balance left, what happens to the surplus?
That's a good question that I didn't get an answer to before I came here. I imagine that it would,
it goes away. Remember, we have 1 year to use it. And so whichever, first it's offered on a proportional basis. If somebody doesn't want water, then the others can get it. But again, the use of the surplus water is for 1 year, and then it goes away. The concept have been discussed, and this probably is good for the TAC to take up, is that if each agency acquires surplus water in proportion to their allocations, there's essentially zero fiscal impact. And then if you don't use it, then that's the effective way to get it to roll from 1 year to the next. But that would be up to, you know, the participating agencies and which ones wanted to follow through on that strategy.
I remember the discussion, and I appreciate the reminder there. The other question had to do with the revenue that is to be collected from the payment of the surplus water, and it's shown on your spreadsheet here of $50 an acre foot. Maybe this is the next item.
That same item.
How is that revenue dealt with, and does it wind up back to the agencies on a proportionate basis or on the amount of water taken?
No, it's whatever surplus water revenues are collected are then given back to the participating agencies in proportion, bought all of the water. Arroyo Grande would get 50% of that revenue back, and then everybody else would share in the other 50%.
So you give the revenue back in proportion to the entitlement,
right?
Not the actual purchase of the surplus.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
I have one question.
Yeah, go ahead.
How do they determine the price? I notice in the chart they have the estimated cost per acre foot. How is that determined?
The contracts speak to the distribution costs. So the actual cost of distributing water through the pipeline system is about $50 an acre foot. Remember, the debt service on all the pipelines is gone. The only debt that we have right now is relating to the water treatment plant and to the actual dam itself. But the contracts speak only to the cost of delivery and not storage or treatment. So,
thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, we'll ask if there's any public comment on this item. Seeing none, we'll bring this back to the committee and ask for a motion.
I'd move staff recommendation, Mr. Chairman.
I'll second it.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? I think we need a roll call vote on this one.
Member Wallace?
Yes.
Member Nichols?
Yes.
Member
Waggy? Yes.
And Member Costello?
Yes. Motion passes. Thank you. Brings us to item 5C, the bond refinancing status.
Thank you. This is an update on the bond refinancing status, which is complete. And to refresh your memory, and in September of 2010, the financial advisors for the county recommended that the bond, the consideration for refinancing of the bonds, happened, that they felt a 10% savings in net present value could be achieved. That would be about $3 million in present value funds if a refinancing occurred. So the districts and your agencies got together and set a target of about 5%. That's as low as they would go to achieve this refinance, and proceeded to work on it. But the bond market took a horrible turn for the worse, and the 5% was not going to be met. It was then revised to about a 3% expectation and what you would move forward with on as a net present value savings, but in such a short time frame.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions?
John, how does the annual savings get factored back into the agency billings?
My understanding is it's split about 50-50 between water rates and the assessments. So depending on how you are set up in your agency, that's how you'd see the savings. Because I believe some agencies don't have assessments. They just have water rates. So it depends on your structure.
So 50% of the savings to each agency would roughly be reflected in their lower bills, which then would be theoretically reflected in their overall cost for Lopez Water for the year.
Yeah, 50% would be on, yeah, their water rate billings for the savings, and 50% that is collected by the county on property taxes.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? I think this is just a file and note item. We don't need to take any action on it.
You're correct.
Thank you, Ed. Anybody in the public wish to come in on this one? No. Seeing no one, we'll close it. Then move on to item 5D, the Urban Water Management Plan update.
Okay, thank you. As required by law, the district is preparing the Urban Water Management Plan. Many of your member agencies are preparing these as well. And in order to qualify for grant funding and other funds such as Prop 84 and 1E, the plan needs to be adopted by the Board of Supervisors by July 1. The state delayed in getting their guidelines finalized. It didn't occur until about mid-March. So we've been working rapidly since then with a consultant to have the plan finaled in time for the Board of Supervisors' ultimate approval. That means that we don't have a plan for you right now because it's still in draft form. But we do plan on bringing the executive summary, draft executive summary, to the TAC at their next meeting so they can review it. And then the Board of Supervisors will hold a public hearing on July 21st, where it will be a recommendation for them to adopt the final plan. And then it will be submitted to the Department of Water Resources before their August 1st deadline. So again, this is only an update. Do realize it could hold a special meeting in June if you wanted to review the plan, but we don't think that's necessary and aren't recommending that.
Let's check on questions. Any questions?
Question, what's the scope then of your urban water management plan? Because we're doing the same thing with our Pismo Beach water plan.
My understanding is just pretty much strictly supply and delivery. You know, we're not operating any wells or doing anything beyond supply and delivery.
So it's just limited to the Zone 3 operation, basically. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. No further questions up on the. And then we'll ask if there is anyone in the public that would like to comment on this. Seeing no one, we'll close this, bring it back. This also requires no action unless we were to choose to decide to meet in June. It doesn't look like that's a necessity, so we'll just file this and move on. Thank you.
If anybody's that interested and concerned, they could attend the TAC meeting.
Yep. Yes, I would agree to TAC. I think it's adequate to cover it.
Except I'm hearing it's not a public meeting?
It's not a public meeting. So I think
there will be an opportunity at the Board of Supervisors. There will be a public hearing.
Right.
Or where they can.
Okay. Thank you. Excellent. Moving on to item six, the capital project updates. Yours too, John.
All right. Thank you, Chairman Costello. I'm going to give an update on for the capital projects that are kind of in the queue or ongoing right now. First is Rodriguez Bridge. That's scheduled for construction in 2012. And just as a reminder, it's the dual project of the pipeline protection and a fish passage enhancement to the area below the where the pipeline crosses the creek. But right now, because of the lake level, there's concern that Lopez may spill next year, and that would intensify the scouring around the pipeline and possibly damage the pipeline, which is the only delivery source to the treatment plant. So our district staff's working with our environmental division to be prepared, if necessary, to issue environmental permits. So just that, let's just call it phase one of the project of protecting the pipeline could happen this year if the dam does spill and we need to protect that pipeline. So staff is currently working on that right now to make sure that we are able to react if necessary. Second update is...
If I could interrupt for just a moment, John, and ask a question about just this specific one. I understand the concept of doing the project in two phases, if you would. Would there be any problems with the...
Be putting boulders up against it to slow down the flows and protect the scouring. That's already part of the plan for that, and that does create enhanced fish passage because it slows down the water a bit. So I don't think that there would be any problems there. It could increase the cost a bit by having a contractor mobilized twice and do possibly additional work, but those would be minimal, and it would be still most likely one contract.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess I was concerned about that, too, that you're doing it in two stages because you have the two different types of permits, the emergency permits and then the regular permits. Is it possible just to fast-track the whole thing and try to do the whole project this year? It seemed like we could save quite a bit of money if that could be achieved.
I think the issue would be obtaining permits.
Right, I understand.
This year, and you can't get emergency permits until there's an emergency. So I think the problem with that is the timing of getting regular permits to fast-track the project. And it's Kelly still here?
It would just seem to save a lot of money if we could do it all at once rather than breaking up the project in portions, but just an opinion. Thank you.
And on to the chlorine dioxide generation system replacement project.
The chlorine dioxide is machines being built by DuPont right now, and it's set for delivery in June. Installation is going to take a couple weeks, and then there's going to be it'll be operational most likely in July, and then there'll be a four-month trial period to make sure it's meeting the requirements before it's formally accepted.
And if we find during that four-month trial period that there's problems with it, how long does it take to put the old system back online? Do we have any problems with continued function?
I don't know that answer. I could get you an answer.
I mean, could we find ourselves with no chlorine dioxide system for a period of time?
Craig Solaire.
John Beaton with the Public Works Department. If we were without the chlorine dioxide for a short period of time, we would be able to use the sodium hypochlorite chlorine disinfectant to meet all the requirements and such. We'd likely see some increase in the THMs, but we've done some studies to show that we can actually still stay below the limits for THMs, even with the use of chlorine certain times of the year.
So it's proceeding as planned. And then on the pigging, previously, in December of 2010, that 5.5-mile stretch of pipeline was pigged, and staff's now assessing that pipeline and determining what the benefit of the project was in relation to increased flows and pressure. And they're expecting to have results in a report format by the end of June.
Okay. Questions? Comments from the public? Okay, thank you. Moving on to future agenda items. Anyone have anything they want added?
I have nothing.
It'd be good to have another report on the results of the flow tests at our next meeting to see what increase capacity and pressure we can get, especially down at the lower end of the pipe in Avila area, where during the summer peaks we have to pump water up the hill to our tank, and increased pressure there would certainly help our electrical costs and the pumping there. So it'd be nice to, and I see Dan's here in the audience. I don't know if he has any preliminary conclusions on his study so far, but it'd be nice to know what the results are. And I know that we're going to discuss that in the TAC, but for the benefit of the public and others, it might be good if there was a preliminary indication of what extra capacity we have in the pipeline.
Unfortunately, the first flow test that we completed on May 4th, we had some technical issues with several of the turnouts, and so we are having to redo the flow test, which is delaying the results of the pigging analysis. So the flow test is rescheduled for next Wednesday, the 25th, at which point we will analyze the data and should be able to present results.
Okay, thank you.
When's the next meeting?
2 months. Next meeting is
2 months. So yeah, we
July
should have
21.
Results by then.
Thank you. Any committee members' comments?
Just the request one more time to the county to work with NIMS and the service to perhaps come back with a front-end schedule to the process so that we can at least get a better fix on the process that is before the schedule that's laid out in our agenda package, so we can see perhaps, and follow